Welcome. A lot of movement off the field in the Bundesliga this week. Hamburg have swapped head coaches. Does that improve their chances of staying in the Bundesliga? Leon Goretzka gets major backlash for his decision to join Bayern Munich. We give our takes on his future move. And finally, we discuss our favorite overachievers of the Bundesliga season so far. This is Tribune Weekly. Davis van Opdorp here with Jonathan Harding and Matt Ford. Jonathan, it's the first time in 2018. Take us through the match day.
German Federal League Division 1, match day 19. Hertha Berlin Sport Club, 1. Ballgame Sport Prussia 09, Dortmund, 1. Gymnastics and Sports Society 1899 Hoffenheim, 1. Bayer 04 Leverkusen Football, 4. Sport Club Freiburg, 2. Lawnball Sport Leipzig, 1. Club for Physical Exercise Prussia Mönchengladbach, 2. Football Club Augsburg, 0. The First Football Club of Mainz, 05. 3. Club for Agility Game Stuttgart, 2. Club for Physical Exercise Wolfsburg Football, 1. Sports Community Frankfurt United, 3. Hamburger Sport Club, 0. The First Football Club of Cologne, 2. Football Club Bavaria Munich, 4. Werder Bremen Sport Club, 2. Football Club Schalke 04, 1. Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896, Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896, 1.
So this Bundesliga weekend brought another coaching casualty to the ranks. It was Markus Gisthol has been sacked by Hamburg. He's been replaced on Monday, as of when we were recording this podcast. He's been replaced by Bernd Hollerbach, or Hollerbach. But whenever you say Hollerbach, you think of Gwen Stefani, so I'm going to say Hollerbach.
I'm not sure that's what he's going for.
That's what everyone thinks. Yeah.
I think there's two mindsets of this sacking of Markus Gisthol. One is that this was... he's had a string of bad results for a while. And in some sense, it took Hamburg a long time to finally recognize that they finally sacked him. At the other side of this, I think that there is that Markus Gisthol leaving is not the problem. There's a much more inrooted problem with Hamburg. We've talked about it on this podcast before. In fact, at the beginning of the season, even when they were doing well. So which camp do you guys fall into? Jonathan, let's go with you first.
I totally agree that there are bigger problems than sacking the head coach. But I also think that 6 games without a win and the worst start in 11 years to a season is something that you can't ignore. But it does feel rather samey for Hamburg in terms of, it's not going right, let's just sack the coach and see whether that makes or brings an effect. Because there's this common belief that if you fire the head coach, that you have this positive effect on the squad and then they sometimes or somehow perform better. I'm not sure that's always been proven in the history of sackings. And I don't know whether that'll work for Hamburg. And the biggest issue with that is that if you sack the head coach by following that logic, you are effectively pardoning the players because you're saying, it's all right, guys. Even though you've not been playing well, you're not the ones that are culpable. You won't have to pay for it. We'll just bring in a new guy. And he's supposed to bring in this new impetus.
Especially with Hamburg has paid these players and are paying these players. Yeah, they have one of the highest wage bills in the Bundesliga. So that's a very good point.
They should really be playing a lot better than they are. They have enough quality on the field. I think there was maybe a sentimental attachment to Gisthol for a little longer than other coaches because he kept them up. But, I'm not sure that Hollerbach is an inspirational choice, but he knows the club, his next player. He's coached a lot under Magath. I'm not sure that's going to be so key, but it makes sense on a certain level to bring in someone who's familiar with Hamburg, but it's not inciting, it's not thrilling, but who wants that job anyway?
Matt, which camp do you fall into on Gisthol?
I think first of all, I think you're absolutely right to say that it's an issue of short-term versus long-term. So I think in the short-term, I definitely fall into the camp of correct decision. They held on to Gisdol for too long, and it reached a point where it was simply untenable. They brought him in, of course, originally to rescue them last season, which he achieved. And then at a club the size of Hamburg, with the resources behind them, the team that they have at their disposal, you mentioned the price. I think it's something in the region of 50 million euros that team cost. That's a ridiculous amount for a team which is constantly, year in, year out, struggling at the bottom of the table. It's an absolute groundhog day. I feel like I'm repeating myself.
How many times?
Year after year. In fact, have you lot got a podcast lying around from last year?
Maybe we should just copy and paste it.
Play it again. And then, yeah, given... I think you said they held on to him a little bit longer for sentimental reasons.
Do you not think?
I'm not quite sure about that. I think it was more the case that, of course, in between, they had the change of sporting director.
Yeah,
didn't
with
they?
Jens Todt now coming in. Exactly. And Bruchhagen as well.
Exactly. Bruchhagen and Todt came in and Beiersdorfer left. So I think, rather than sentiment, I think it was more of a case of, here we are now with this is finally a chance for a new start. And it clearly hasn't happened.
Again.
I think you're absolutely right to say that the players can't be excused. And I think the fans hit that point right on their head after the defeat to Cologne, when the Hamburg players dared to turn around and face them. After finally, they all turned their backs and put their fingers up at them. So I don't think the players are getting away with this.
I think you can have a pretty good guess of which finger that was, too.
Yeah. There was also a look of absolute disgust on one old lady's face. If you can find the photo, it's absolutely brilliant. It's pure disgust at the performance she's just witnessed. And rightly so. And yet the odd thing is that me and you watched the game together, didn't we, John? And
yeah.
I thought Hamburg started off really well.
She was scoring the first 10 minutes.
She was scoring the first 20 seconds.
Yeah.
They forced, I think it was Andre Hahn forced Timo Horn into a fantastic save after just 20 seconds of the game played. There was so much tension around the game. There's quite an excitement building around it. This big relegation six-pointer. And I thought, in those opening 10-15 minutes, I thought, look, I tell you what, Hamburg have come out here. I thought Filip Kostic was absolutely lethal down the left-hand side. A couple of really penetrative runs. I thought he was going to cause problems all game. But then it suddenly stopped. I'm not sure whether they were put off by the fact that Cologne were able to break and counter-attack so easily. Forced Papadopoulos into an early challenge on Osako, didn't he? And he got an early yellow. Maybe that left him a little bit unsure. But then, all that early momentum seemed to disappear completely. And it was the same old Hamburg, which we saw last week and before Christmas
season.
And last season and the season before that. And now they've brought in this another change of manager. And they hope that he'll have the same effect that Gisdol had when he came in. I heard a fantastic comparison on a German language podcast earlier on today, in which someone said it's like your house is on fire and you've called the fire brigade and they've put out the fire in your living room because that's where you want to be for the time being, but just leave the rest to the later date.
That's excellent.
So it's absolutely hit the nail on the head.
Excellent. I like that.
What's going to happen when the flames come back into the living room?
Well, one thing about Bernd Hollerbach that I thought was interesting was that we've talked about this before when previous Bundesliga coaches have been sacked, that a lot of times that they go to their reserve team and call someone in. Now, Hamburg, to my knowledge, have not done that with any of their recent appointments after they're in their coaching carousel. Instead, they give us Bernd Hollerbach, for those who don't know, was the Würzburger Kickers head coach. He brought them into the basically the Federal League set up, rather than just being in the regional leagues.
Up to the second division, wasn't it?
They were in the second division last year. Got relegated after those two consecutive promotions. And then
he also played almost 200 games for Hamburg as a player.
Exactly.
He certainly knows the club, and it's not a...
It's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah,
do you think there's something to this, that there's... Is it just that Hamburg don't have a reserve coach that can take over? Or is it
I think Hamburg would never do?
Oh,
no, Hamburg are in a slightly different position to, say, maybe Werder Bremen. I mean, and they're not in the table, ironically, but there's this huge weight of pressure on Hamburg, this sleeping giant, you know, this European champion, let's not forget that, right? And they, this huge audience, big crowds, certain expectation, and yet for the last, whatever, you know, four or five seasons, it certainly feels like, might actually not even just longer. Feel like it, yeah, even longer. They just continually focusing on short-term goals, aka avoiding relegation, avoiding relegation, avoiding relegation.
Because on the one hand, that's understandable. Yeah, they absolutely. Do have to stay there.
They have to stay there.
That short-term success is absolutely key.
But it's pressure.
Going down would be disastrous for them. I know there have been arguments in the past that would it actually be a good thing for them? Mm. It worked for Stuttgart.
Yeah.
Let's ask the question, would it be a good thing for them?
For Hamburg, I don't think it would, because I think they're in so much debt and they're so reliant on Kuna's money.
I think their team would go and their squad would dissipate.
It would leave them in huge trouble.
So Klaus-Michael Kuna, I think, has already made threats, basically. I don't know if he's actually pulled his money out of the club, but he's the main investor in the club. He's made threats of pulling out that investment. Now, you guys think, I mean, I think this too, but you guys also think that if they go down, he's going to do that, since he's already threatened to do that.
Yeah, I mean, he does that, then they lose their key players, and then you end up a bit like Kaiserslautern, you know, it's a big stadium that only then brings in 20,000, 15,000 in second division. It's a shadow of its former self. A big club then turns into, you know, a small one, which is a really sad development.
It'd be a huge gamble for them to take going down. I don't think it's something they could realistically set.
Even if they were
a well-run club with a proper long-term plan, to say, right, let's accept for the time being, we'll go down and we'll plan properly to revamp the entire structure from bottom up. I don't think Hamburg are even in a situation to say that. I think short-term staying in the league once again has to be an absolute priority for them. And then Gisdol wasn't the man, but. Is Hollerbach then the man under this new structure with Tote and Bruchhagen?
Well, let me bring
to then develop and finally develop something.
Let me bring up Harry Bruchhagen though, because in his last job, which was with Frankfurt were also in somewhat of a despair, and he, even though they were relegated a few times, he basically built them, helped them build into basically the club that Frankfurt is today, which is a solid mid-table team. Now, this sounds like, Matt, from what you just said, that you don't think that you don't think that he will be able to do that.
No, I think he would be too financially restricted once Kuna's money went out of the club, if they went down, which I think is a distinct possibility.
Okay, Jonathan, do you agree?
Yeah, I do. But I think the interesting thing is that we've not talked about is that, yeah, if they get relegated, it would be disastrous for all the reasons that we just pointed out. But that's also part of the reason that they're handicapped. They're handicapping themselves, because every season it's all about keeping the clock ticking. That's the wrong, for me, the wrong way to approach that. You can't suddenly say, oh, well, you know, we have to make sure that we're still, this clock's still ticking, that we're still a Bundesliga club, that we're still making history, X, Y, Z, because you're never going to get away from this team that's constantly avoiding relegation otherwise. There has to be some sort of long-term plan in place, even if your short-term goal is to stay in the league. I think the problem for Hamburg is, for the last five seasons, it's constantly been short-term plan, survival, 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 survival. And that's why they're not going anywhere. They are literally standing still. And the only reason they've been saved is because there have been some pretty bad sides coming up and going back down again. You know, have they been good enough even in the relegation playoff against, you know, Fürth, for example? I mean, 1-1 that game in the second leg, right? It's just not good enough performances. And part of me thinks that unless Hamburg get their act together off the pitch in terms of planning, that they're just going to consistently be a side playing against relegation for seasons to come. And that's going to get hard then. Maybe the option is, let's go back, let's get rid of these high earners, let's start breeding in younger players.
Which
let's
they seem to
philosophy.
Be somewhat
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, they are, with, you know, with Ito.
And
yeah,
Rapp,
just start doing that a bit more.
And Janjevic.
And even if you go down, at least then you have a plan then, because you're starting to, your finances are in order, you're not paying someone 6 million euros a year, whatever it is. You know, there's some degree of progression and philosophy. I don't know what Hamburg is, what it stands for anymore, and that's the problem.
Well, the problem is, like you said, Hamburg has come to stand for a team that is purely purely hanging on to this identity of, you know, we're the Bundesliga dinosaur, we've never been
relegated.
That clock's still ticking over in the corner, and it can't go on. They're also suffering this year from the fact that despite the league's overall mediocrity, there are actually no clear relegation candidates at the start of the season. Like, yep. We had Ingolstadt and Darmstadt last season. Everyone thought, well, if anyone's going to go down, it'd be at least one of them. This season, if it wasn't for the fact that Cologne had such a disastrous first half of the season, Hamburg would be bottom themselves. Mm. And when it came to it, we won't discuss Cologne today, but they'd certainly showed that there's certainly much more intensity, a better dressing room atmosphere among the Cologne squad even before Peter Stöger got sacked, and they showed that with their reaction on Saturday. As for Hamburg, I really don't know where they go. Hollerbach has got a reputation, just as he was as a player. He's very hard, tough tackling, physical player, and he's got the reputation as a coach as well. Having said that, he didn't get Würzburg up directly through two leagues just by screaming and shouting and being and demonstrating passion. He's obviously got some tactical nous to him as well. So yeah, this is a chance. It's not on paper. When you look at the Hamburg squad, it's not a disastrous squad, is it? No. Either. I thought it was quite odd that Gisdol started Sakai on the bench against Cologne, given that he made him captain when he first took over the job. We then put him on the bench, but I think he'll be very much a bent Hollerbach player. He spoke in the past about how he likes to have leaders on the pitch who assume responsibility. On the field and take control on the field, and in players like Papadopoulos and Sakai, I think he's got that. You'll expect more experienced players like Holtby and Hunt and Kostic, perhaps Diekmeyer, to step up and play those leading roles. Whether that in itself will be enough, I don't know. They need some sort of footballing quality as well to save them. They showed that for 10 minutes at the start on Saturday, like I said.
Couldn't get past Horn. The midfield is what worries me. I think they're a bit light in the middle. Gideon, Young, Alban Ekdal. There's nothing.
And yet you started Saka on the bench. That really baffled me.
But there's nothing there that either shouts transitional play, that shouts, you know, safe coverage in front of the back four, or something playmaking-wise.
It's difficult to know what any of those players really stand for.
Yeah, because, you know, a few years ago, we knew that Lewis Holtby was a great number 10, and then he was an 8, and now he's a 6. So now I don't know what he is, and I don't know whether Lewis Holtby knows what he is. And that's kind of the problem. You know, Aaron Hunt's decent behind the striker, but Bobby Wood's gone off the boil completely. And okay, right now, Andre Hahn probably is their number one choice because he's looking the most interested when they play football. But there seems to be quite a complete imbalance to Hamburg's team. You've got Papadopoulos screaming and shouting and going crazy at the back, and that's great. But, you know, Polisbek's in goal. He's young and nervous.
Also a strange swap, by the way.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he's a backup keeper, really. I never saw him as a starter. So, but, you know, by the by, the point is, there's this overall feeling of, who's doing what? Who's leading? Who's playing where? Whose role is what? And where's the quality coming from? You've got flashes of it from players like Hunt, but he's over the hill. Hahn, okay, yeah, now and again. Saka should be starting, absolutely. But there's not really anybody that stands out in that team that you say, he's the player. You know, Kostic was probably the best player for them on the weekend against Cologne.
For 15 minutes.
Mm.
Which is a lot for Hamburg this season. We should give him praise for that.
Yeah, but that's the problem. Hollersbach has got a lot to do.
Do they stay up? Yes or no?
No, they're going down, I think. I think this is a step too far. I would like personally to see them stay up. I've taken a sort of pleasure over the past few years in these dramatic last-minute comebacks. The scenes in Karlsruhe were when that free kick went in and saved them with the last kick of the game was fantastic viewing. Brilliant. That's what it's all about.
I think
John, do this here.
They go down, but I think the biggest loss for any situation here is for the Bundesliga. It's a big, big stadium, a big team, and to lose that is not good. Not good for the league. I mean, attendance numbers are important, but it's not good for them. And it's a problem. But yeah, I think this is the year that Hamburg disappear.
All right, well, it wasn't all Hamburg over the weekend. The Sunday was actually a very busy day. Of course, a lot of milestones by Bayern Munich. But the most basically the biggest headline fodder of the weekend was what happened between Schalke and Hannover's game. The game itself wasn't very interesting, but Leon Goretzka played his first game in 93 days since his injury. And of course, also since he agreed to join Bayern Munich in the summer. And
the worst kept secret.
It was, I think, he also was one of those worst kept secrets. He called it after the game. That was
one of the hardest days of his career, having to deal with all of the negativity. Matt, you seem to be shaking your head and have a kind of a smear on your face. So why don't you give your thoughts on the whole Leon Goretzka situation first?
What
was the banner once again? There was a banner in Schalke's end, and I think that was kind of telling about maybe that's why Leon feels the way that he does. I mean, whether it's necessarily justified for him to say it's the hardest period of his career.
The size of the banner was impressive enough, given absolutely. That they only had a couple of days to prepare it. Fair dues to the lads who have organised that in such
good
quick
effort.
Time.
And the banner said?
The banner said, "Neither money nor titles are more valuable than our club. Whoever doesn't appreciate that can bleep off."
It's a family show, Davis.
It's a family show. No PG-13 labels here.
And it might indeed... It might have been the hardest day in Leon Goretzka's career, but he's only got himself to blame for that. I think he's brought it on himself.
Why do you say that?
I say that, and as I was saying before, I don't think he needs to go yet. I think one day it's inevitable that he moves on to bigger and better things, whether that's Bayern Munich or whether that's elsewhere outside Germany. It is irrelevant, really. I think that's fine. Inevitably, he is going to go. He doesn't need to go now for his... Even looking at it from a purely selfish perspective, for his personal development, I don't think he needs to go now. I think this season...
Wait. So why do you say that? Because I disagree with that. Because Leroy Sané, was, I think, younger than him when he went to Manchester City. And he's been a revelation for one of the reasons why...
Yeah,
Manchester
that's the coach, though. That's the coach.
Sure, but... I mean, Bayern Munich also has a tendency to get good coaches. So I don't understand why he
didn't do well last time
out. Not the right spot, right time in his career to leave.
I think that he fitted well into the structures and the systems that Manchester City have been quite specifically targeting.
Sunny, of course, not Goretzka,
quite specifically targeting and building over the past few
it's
years.
It's Guardiola. I mean,
it's not Guardiola, the backroom staff that he's assembled.
Yeah,
there.
But
they've targeted the players specifically.
But why do you think that Goretzka is? It's not the right time for him to leave.
So I don't think he'll get the games that Sané gets Manchester City. Sané was brought in specifically because they were looking for that sort of player to fit into that system, which Saviano and Berigi's team even brought Guardiola in for. This has been building up for years at Manchester City. As much as I hate to say it. as for Leon Goretzka, is it going to be best for his personal development moving to Bayern Munich? No, I don't think it is. I think if he's in the short term, if he wants titles and his name and medals and his name on Bundesliga titles and DFB Pokals and potentially Champions League, who knows, then okay, great. Is he going to play in those games? I don't know. There's a huge amount of competition there in Bayern Munich's midfield.
Yeah, well, I've seen people say that, but I think what some people forget is that Arturo Vidal is 30 years old. I think that Vidal is not going to be at Bayern Munich next season. I think that they are trying to build a new core in midfield, considering the fact that they spent so much money on Corentin Tolisso as well, and is willing to also pay a lot for James Rodriguez. They're trying to remake their midfield.
Exactly. Just name two there, which would be direct competition for
sure, but I don't think that that's going to exclude Leon Goretzka from being in that mix. I do think that he has the quality to match those players, and I think he believes that too.
I think that's
which
fine.
Which is why he's moving now.
I think that's fine. I also think he could have waited and been even better had he and made the same move in 1 year or 2 years' time, and in the meantime become a focal point and potentially even the captain of a new team. Exciting steps under Tedesco.
He's not a captain personality, though.
Okay, then not captain, but at least a focal point of that team. He can definitely be that. And if he's after Champions League football, I think, like I said before, given how mediocre the league is at the moment, with Goretzka in that Schalke side, Schalke have a huge chance, in fact, I say odds on, to come in that top four and get Champions League football next season as well. So if he wants that, he would have had that at Schalke as well. And then he could have gone to Bayern. And I wouldn't begrudge him that at all. I think at some point he would need to step up, like I said. Finally, and again, this perhaps being a little bit overly idealistic or utopian, had he signed on for one more year, that would then have allowed Schalke and consequently Bochum, I believe there's a clause in there as well, guaranteeing them a percentage of any sell-on fee, and would have been able to secure Schalke a nice big fee when he moved on. And it would have been better for his development, it would have been better for Schalke's development, would have been better for Schalke's finances, and also Bochum down the line as well. And he wouldn't then also be tagged with this reputation now, either fairly or unfairly, as a mercenary who've left a team in shtick.
Jonathan, you've been nodding pretty much throughout Matt Ford's entire diatribe. No.
Jonathan agrees.
I'm assuming you feel the same way.
I think Matt makes a very interesting point. I fundamentally, I don't agree that this is a bad move. I think that Leon Goretzka wants to be a superstar, and I think he's going to be that at Bayern Munich. I think he's going to be a huge part of the Germany national team in the years to come, and the best way to do that is to be a part of the Bayern Munich team, because most of the Germany starting 11 play in the Bayern Munich team. And just purely whether that is right or wrong is a whole nother podcast. But from a player development sense, you know, you want to be around the best players in the world. The best players in Germany right now in terms of superstars are at Bayern Munich. And for Goretzka to want to get on the same level as them is understandable, because he obviously sees himself a lot further along. I would say that I would also have liked to see him stay another year and play under Tedesco, because I totally agree that this year in the league, everybody other than Bayern has been completely mediocre, and therefore the door is wide open for Schalke to take the initiative, which they do more often than not look like they can take, and get into the Champions League. And for Goretzka to do that, to lead that team into the Champions League, and then to play with Schalke in the Champions League, would be great exposure for him. He would undoubtedly be the most important player in that team, maybe with Fehrmann. And that symbolism, that status, that development period would be massive. He would be able to carry that team, carry the Gelsenkirchen City into back into the top flight or the top tier of Europe, which would be massive for his development. And I think it would also be good for his character.
And then he can leave.
And then, having done that, having experienced that and having learn a bit more from Tedesco, who seems like a coach that, quite frankly, if I was a young player, I would want to learn as much as possible from in terms of communication and ability of handling myself. Then you move up. And in the meantime, Bayern may well have finally sorted themselves out and transitioned away from a lot of the older players and who's going to be the new manager. Because, quite frankly, that has to play a key role, if I'm Leon Goretzka, in my joining of Bayern Munich. Who is the next man after Heynckes? Because my development at Bayern Munich is very based on, is largely based on who the coach is. But Carlo Ancelotti didn't do a good job at Bayern Munich, right? And the development of some of those players was actually detrimental. They actually regressed during that period. Mm-hmm. Bring in Heynckes and you see a completely different situation. So for Goretzka, I would have liked to have seen him stay on a little bit longer, play on and develop a bit further. He obviously sees it in a completely different way. And there is something to be said about him choosing to pocket 10, 15 million or whatever it is for himself by moving on a free, rather than giving Schalke or Bochum any benefit by signing on a one-year deal and saying, you know what, I'm going to go next year, but I'm going to give you everything. I'm going to play in the Champions League or get you in the Champions League or play in the Champions League for you. And then I can leave and everybody might see that slightly differently. And while I agree he owes nothing to Schalke per se because he's not from there, and he said that, I think, in an Elf Freunder interview a few months ago, you know, don't think I'm a Schalke boy. He's a Bochum lad. So if there's a part of me there thinking, if you're a Bochum lad, then surely you would want to move for 25, 30 million to Bayern so that Bochum can benefit, because right now Bochum could certainly do with a bit of cash. So I'd like to have seen him stay. I would have liked to have seen him maybe consider the more utopian perspective, as Matt just so nicely called it. The fact that he hasn't made him very popular, and maybe that's what we need to discuss next, is the reaction from Schalke fans. But I think the move makes sense.
So let's get into the reaction, because that's actually one point I wanted to bring up. I've seen a lot of people on social media try to make this point, which is, if Leon Goretzka had gone to Barcelona, which was one of the other teams that he was strongly linked with, that the backlash from Schalke fans would not be as great. Do you subscribe to that theory, yes or no?
No, I think it would. I think there would have been a there would still been a big backlash. Maybe not quite as massive.
There still would have been
almost, yeah, almost as big a backlash, I would say.
Because leaving
it's almost
Schalke,
as big, so it doesn't matter if it's in Germany. Because I think there
leaving
some
Schalke
that,
is, I think that the, is betraying that city and those people who were so faithful. And if you choose to walk away from that, yeah, it hurts if it's Bayern, absolutely. But if you choose to walk away from it, whoever it is, that is a knife in the heart to those people who come out every Saturday.
I think Bayern made it, the fact that Bayern made it a little bit worse, but I think it would have been the same reaction had it gone anywhere, given that he'd spent the past 3 or 4 months, or at least his agent and everyone else, given the impression that, oh no, this is actually still on an knife edge.
That is obviously, that is,
and you know what, Heidel even said in the press conference that in the summer they were close to, and they had basically, not even close to, they'd agreed a contract extension in the summer, apparently, he and his agent. Heidel said that, right? So,
agree in principle.
Yeah, but then apparently out of nowhere, this desire for more time to consider comes from the player, and you wonder what conversations have gone on there. For
the
him
conversation
to suddenly,
that's gone on is that he's been told, "Look, Bayern Munich are in for you. This only comes about
once
in
your
career.
Life. Take
you
it
take
now.
Take it now, or you don't." I don't think that's the case. I think with a player like Leon Goretzka, he could have moved to Bayern Munich in a couple of years' time, and I wouldn't begrudge him that.
So, what do we expect from Leon Goretzka then? Because it seems like Matt, you think that he's going to not play at Bayern Munich.
Not play, but he certainly won't be the focal
be
point
of
the team that he could be at Schalke.
Yeah, and Jonathan, do you also believe that?
I think he will. I think Bayern Munich, I think clearly they've got a plan at the moment to transition heavily towards German players, and I think there's a certain emphasis at the moment of I don't want to say, of making that the key criteria for recruitment. I don't think it's like that, but
it almost is, isn't it?
But
there's
it feels like
evidence
that.
Suggesting
you know,
that
if
is
you
the case.
if their lineup next season, you know, you've got Neuer, maybe he's in a wheelchair. I don't know if he ever recovers from his injury. Kimmich, Zule, Hummels, Bernat, right? That's virtually German. Midfield, you've got Rudy, Goretzka. And then you probably still have Ribben and Robbery because they're just going to play until they're 500 because Bayern don't have a backup plan. They can't decide. And then you've got Lewandowski or Müller.
Sandro Wagner as well.
Yeah, and Sandro Wagner. So there's a huge...
And Serge Gnabry possibly.
Yeah, and Serge Gnabry. There's a huge German core there. And I think maybe that's one of the reasons that he goes...
And they're after a German-speaking coach, aren't they?
And it's a safe option for Goretzka because he knows the league, he knows the culture, he knows all of that's fine. I think he plays because I agree with you. I think Vidal's going and I think they make an adjustment. But I also think he wants to be around players of better quality. I mean that with no disrespect to Schalke.
I think that's an absolutely fair argument. I think
Bayern will make a way.
I think Goretzka as a player stands equally as good a chance of developing himself surrounded by the high quality of play at Bayern Munich as he would taking on this independent focal point leading role at Schalke. I think there's arguments both ways there to say that both would benefit his development in different but equally positive ways.
He obviously feels that the Schalke option is not relevant for him, isn't he? He's reached his ceiling there and has to go somewhere else. Obviously, otherwise he wouldn't make the move, right?
Or he thinks that this is the only chance.
He's gonna
this
get.
Is the only chance he'll get.
Oh, maybe there's a degree of player fear about injury. You know, if I get injured in the summer in the World Cup and then Bayern don't come back or whatever.
Maybe I can understand that.
Paranoia.
As well. I can get that as well. I would still suggest that I think he would have the best of both worlds by developing himself for another year at Schalke, and then joining Bayern Munich, where he would also know who's in charge.
Yeah, that's a
good point. I hadn't
such
thought
a good,
of that even.
Such an important factor.
Who's going to be playing under?
I don't think it's as important as you think it does, but...
I think that's absolutely
but
decisive.
Let's go back to the Schalke fans first. Clemens Tönnies, the chairman for Schalke, came out and said, after the fan treatment of Leon Goretzka, that basically, especially if Leon Goretzka doesn't give his all, like some other players in the past have, like... Robert Lewandowski is one example of a player who
best example
knew where he was going but still gave his club everything he had.
He's phenomenal, yeah.
I'm setting the over-under at 2.5 games, and that's the number of games Leon Goretzka is going to sit in the stands while healthy the rest of the season. Over or under? 2.5 games.
I don't think they'll sit him in the stand. I think Tedesco will keep playing him because Tedesco's too professional to let that sort of thing affect his judgment, and that's fine.
So under?
Under two and a half games.
But
he sits.
Yeah, if he's fit. He'll play. I wouldn't play him. I'd leave him to rot.
Yeah. I'm going to go over just on the fact that I think if Schalke Schalke have a great history of not handling these things as well as they should. And he was booed heavily on Sunday. And he didn't play very well. He wasn't very noticeable. Obviously, he said on social media that he wants to give it his all and he's going to get Schalke back in the Champions League and win the German Cup with them, which is all, you know, nice and lovely, great things to say. But then to actually perform that is a different thing. And I think, as much as I have no idea what that's like, because I'm not a professional footballer, I would have loved to have seen him absolutely boss that game, assist two goals and deliver a 3-1 victory, because that would have been the best way to silence everybody. And he would have played every single game for the rest of the season if he'd done that. Because what are you going to do as a Schalke fan? You can be as angry as you want, mate, but he's just won you the game. And you can't, there's no better argument than delivering a performance. And he didn't do that. So this is going to drag. Because if he doesn't play well next weekend, same boos, same argument, it will just get louder and it will be a bigger and bigger issue. And then
it might start affecting
Tedesco. Then it starts affecting the team. Maybe I shouldn't. And then Tedesco is going to have to say, and Tonis is going to go, I've said that we can't play him if he doesn't play well. He's not playing well. What are you going to do? Tedesco is going to be like, well, you're not. And then maybe someone else is playing well. You have to take him out.
I think he's still fine. He has to win his place back as well. I mean, in those games that he missed injured before the winter break, that was Schalke's best period of the season.
I don't think he has much of a place to win back.
Well, okay, maybe not win back, but he didn't feature in those 4 or 5 games before the winter break in which Schalke climbed up to second.
The longer it rumbles on, the bigger a problem it will be.
So we've had a long discussion so far on this podcast. We hope that you've enjoyed it, and we would like for you to enjoy it a little more. So one thing that we want to start doing here in the new year in 2018 is get you guys more involved in what we talk about. So what we're planning to do on every Sunday, we're calling it the Shout from Row Z.
Nicely done.
I'm an American, so Zed is hard for me to say. what we're going to start doing is we're going to start submitting a poll of what you want one of our topics to be. We will give you 3 options as suggestions, but of course, if you have other ideas that you want us to talk about, you can also reply to the tweet, reply to us directly, and just let us know what you want us to talk about. But for the third topic today, I think there are so many great individual performances this past weekend and also this season, and we wanted to go through who we think has had not just an overachieving season, but also someone that kind of came a little bit out of nowhere. That's a little bit of a cliche, but someone that has far outperform our expectations. So, Jonathan, this was actually your idea, so why don't you start?
Yeah, Leon Bailey is the one I want to start with. Been really impressed with him. I still can't get over the fact that he's just 20. Every time I, you know, watch him and look at the development, I just cannot get over the fact that
he's been making headlines for the wrong reason since he was 17, 18. Yeah. So I think we feel like he's been around a lot longer than he has, but
that arc of development that he's now got in the next 3 or 4 years is frightening. You know, by the time he's 25, 26, he could be phenomenal. You know, like one of the best wingers in the world if he continues to develop like this. He's just leading Leverkusen, who are, as a team, having a great season. But on the weekend, he's just capped off his what can only be described as sensational season so far with a back heel goal in the box from 10 yards out. And afterwards, he just said, when he was asked about it, he said, well, I knew the goal frame wasn't going to move. I mean, talk about composure. He's a good
kind of arrogance. Nice arrogance.
It's just like that
arrogance.
It's just on the right side of confidence, you know, like it's not too much. He's it seems like a very happy player, plays with a lot of joy. So dominant when he has the ball, great pace, great control with the ball as well. A lot of these sort of wingers don't always have that same control. I think Bellarabi is great when he hasn't got the ball. Sometimes with the ball, he can get a bit confused.
Very hit and miss.
Whereas Bailey seems to not only have great delivery more often than not, he's got a brilliant whip on the ball when he gets the cross in. But he's also pretty lethal when he gets the chance to shoot himself. And I know that we've talked about this before, Matt, but it's also that already there are early signs there, and maybe this is a Heiko Herrlich influence, maybe it's a Bundesliga influence, that he's tracking back. That he's doing that dirty work as a winger that, you know, is not so often seen with these guys who score and create all the time. And, you know, given the season that he's had, you know, obviously he's already had transfer rumours. Chelsea's supposed to be interested. Arsenal's supposed to be interested. It's inevitable. Every player that does something good one weekend is already off somewhere else. It's just the nature of the beast. But I really think if he plays this well for the next 6 months, you know, A, it's a tragedy that we won't be seeing Jamaica at the World Cup, because that would just be brilliant. But B, I mean, Leverkusen have a real tough job on their hands holding on to him in the summer, because someone's going to come in with a big bid, because the guy's been, you know, monstrous and at the absolute heart of why Leverkusen have been so good. So, yeah, Leon Bailey. Fantastic.
It wasn't just a goal he scored. He was involved in two of Leverkusen scored four, and he was involved
all
in
but one.
In all but one of them. And, like you said, he's penetrative, he gets at defences, and I've been saying all season that his work rate's impressed me as well. Mm. He's increasingly popping up a little bit deeper in the on the pitch as well, and getting stuck in and starting off these attacks, not just finishing them. So
I'll say this too. We've praised Heiko Herrlich a little bit this season, and I think we should praise him more.
Absolutely.
Considering he's still he's the third option that Leverkusen wanted as the coach.
Exactly.
But one thing is he's finding a way to get Leon Bailey on the field, whether it's in as a wing back position with Julian Brandt, whether it is as a regular attacking midfielder or a winger on the left. It seems like Herrlich is doing whatever he can to get him on the field, and I think that's the best sign, and probably one of the best things in the world for a young player is if your coach is basically moving tactics around you to get you on the field.
And not just that, but every time he gets played in a position, he delivers an excellent performance wherever he plays. So
I think we said when the teams came out before Hoffenheim Leverkusen on Saturday, well, that stood out as an extremely attacking line.
Yeah, Bailey,
Follant, Alario, Brandt. In the same team.
This is like 4-2-4.
And then scored far away at Hoffenheim. So that went well.
Yeah. Well done, Heike.
Matt, who's your player?
We were saying before that he's only made two starts, but I'm going for Jadon Sancho, who I've been impressed with in those two starts.
Two Englishmen on the couch. I am not surprised you're the Englishman.
No, I'm genuinely always pleased to see young English or British players go abroad and try and expand their horizons a little bit in different leagues. I think it's a shame that Oliver Burke went to the club that he did, but fair play that he went there. And I thought in terms of football development, it was a great opportunity for him, which I don't think he took.
Yeah.
Whether it was in terms of expanding his football knowledge and getting used to a new and perhaps foreign style of play.
I just think his pecs were too big. This is not German football at all.
Oh, his hard drive was empty.
Yeah, well, then
still
again,
empty.
Then again, you see, I look at the goal that Timo Werner scored again to give them the lead against Freiburg. That strength and that narrow-minded staring at goal and running towards it, and then that shot into the bottom corner. Exactly the sort of goal that Oliver Burke was also capable of scoring, and he did in the one goal that he did score against Cologne. He showed that drive to burst through the defence the way he did. So
let's get this back.
Anyway, he's not there anymore. But Jadon Sancho is also going to follow those footsteps, and I think there were positives right from the moment he went, because the background to his move was that Guardiola wanted to keep him at Manchester City and wasn't giving him the game time, and Sancho went. Actually approached him on the training pitch and said, "Are you going to give me games or not? You either give me games or I go." He's telling Pep Guardiola this.
Balls of steel.
Incredible for a 17-year-old. And Guardiola said, "No, you're going to get games." Well, am I? And he didn't get them, so he went.
Good on him.
And where he's landed in at Dortmund, it seems two things have come together here. Because reading earlier that apparently Stöger said that he was aware of him when he was at Cologne. And joked that they tried to get him to Cologne, but that wasn't happening. For some reason, he wanted to stay in with Manchester City. I don't see why you would.
Don't know why you would.
But I'd have him, I'd have left.
Manchester United.
Now that he got to Dortmund, he's had his two starts. It didn't quite come off against Wolfsburg, but he was heavily involved. Four shots on goal. He hit the post. He was tracking back and launching attacks for Dortmund. The two massive chances that Yarmolenko missed in those games, it was Sancho who started those moves, so he's been well involved. He stood out more against Hertha Berlin at the weekend, and again, although it ultimately didn't come off for Dortmund in terms of the results, if anyone's not seen the way that Sancho set up Kagawa's equaliser, then have a look at it, the way he drives into the box, couple of step overs, and then when that doesn't come off at first, he doesn't give up. He picks the ball up again, turns around, and puts a great little cross right onto Shinji Kagawa's head. So really, really good attitude, and I've been very impressed with him.
Yeah, he's been... I mean, he's, I think, also a player that Dortmund kind of needed. Christian Pulisic has done an incredible job, but he is really not that kind of, like, go directly at you winger. I don't think, anyways. I think he's more of a guy that he can use his skill to get to the goal line, certainly. But Jadon Sancho, I just think, is on a different level. And I think he will continue to play because he's able to do that.
Yeah, I think he takes the pressure off Pulisic a bit as well. I think Dortmund were very expecting or required Pulisic to do a lot in attack, and I think Sancho offers another outlet.
The expectation is always ridiculous. And in a way, Dortmund have brought it upon themselves with having such a good record of bringing through young players who have then gone on to bigger and better things. And people are going to expect so much now of this trio around Isak, Pulisic, and Sancho. And let's not expect too much too soon. We can admire the development so far and be impressed with the development so far and wish them all the best and hope they keep developing the right way. But Stöger hit the nail on the head after the Hertha Berlin game. He said, yeah, he was impressed with him, but he said sometimes it's a bit like a circus with him. That was the quote he used. He said he just needs to learn when to use his speed, his dynamism, and his technique at the right times. And I think that's absolutely key. And with someone like working with someone like Peter Stöger, at least for the next 6 months and maybe more, who knows? Can only be a good thing. And let's keep an eye on it and see how that goes for Jadon.
And the best part about it is he's actually going to get a chance to do that and to develop, because under Peter Stöger is true, but he's going to get the chance to play games. So that's the best way to improve.
Yeah. Speaking of the best way to improve, Alfred van Borgeson, I think, has found the best way.
Knew you were going to go with it.
Improve that. He's my player. I think we all love him.
How old is he?
He's I have to check.
I want to say he's 27, 28.
I was going to go a bit younger than that.
Oh, okay. I think he's 27.
I have no idea.
But the question is,
having a great season.
He's having a great season again, because I mean, he was pretty good at the end of last season as well. I mean,
he's 28, so he's not a spring chicken,
but
he, I just doubted John Harding's knowledge of an Augsburg centre forward.
It was interesting when he came over from Real Sociedad. I think because he was coming over from a team at the time that was competing, I believe, in the Champions League, if not the Champions League, they were definitely in the European
spots.
Can't
say my Real Sociedad knowledge is
we played them, but I can't remember.
But I think he was a backup striker there, and he came over. And I think in Augsburg under Markus Weinziel at the time was doing really well.
Yeah.
And they, but he wasn't playing. He's had trouble with injuries as well. And I think what was more telling about maybe who the player he was at the time was the fact that he wasn't playing even for Iceland, that they were
Icelandic.
Yes. Yeah, so, well, no, they were using even
Ida Gudjonsson? No.
Yeah, no, from Kaiserslautern. It was Bonvartsen.
Oh, Bonvartsen, yeah.
Bonvartsen from Kaiserslautern. Yeah.
Good knowledge.
Good knowledge, David.
Look at me, Ida Gudjonsson, 700 years ago.
Anyways, they were using him in the Euros when they had made that great run a couple of years ago. And it seemed like even in the Iceland team, he couldn't get a game. But he's been, I think Iceland is
the number first choice.
He's going to be one of the first choices there. And I think that the way that he has improved under Manuel Baum, of course, he's kind of more of those target strikers.
Yeah.
And Manuel Baum is good to recognize that. I think even Kayubi to Finn Bogason is one of the most...
Do you think Manuel Baum has gone for... Because Augsburg have been so attacking this season. It's been really refreshing to see after they just survived last year. Do you think Manuel Baum has gone more attacking, knowing that he has a Finn Bogason up there, and obviously he's brought in Gregoric and Kayubi as well?
That's key, though.
Or has Finn Bogason benefited from that? Which way around do you
think
it's
the
chicken or the egg argument? Yeah.
I think it's the second. I think Gregoric and Kayubi have lifted the play of Finn Bogason even further, because Gregoric is fantastic in that role just behind him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the entire Augsburg attack has been
like I said, a revelation.
Overperforming, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Kayubi too. I mean, who knew that he was going to be a quality player ever again? You know, and Philip Max has obviously improved a lot.
Should be in the German team.
And he's going to be in the conversation to be in the German team. And that's also because Finn Bogason is getting on the end of his crosses. And he had the hat trick to force the draw, I think, with Freiburg it was.
It could be.
And he was absolutely phenomenal. I think he bookended that game. He scored within like the first minute, and he scored two games in stoppage time. Yeah. So
that was against Gladbach. I think the early goal and the late game. The early goal and the late goal, they were against Gladbach.
Either way, I think he's been really impressive. It's really good to see a player like that. And I think that it's good for clubs like Augsburg that they can find these players.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because a club like Augsburg, they get their players purchased way before they even make it to the first team, their best players. And Augsburg have had to rely on a lot of players, whether it's around, like mediocre players around the Bundesliga, or if it's mediocre players around other leagues in Europe, and they have to buy these players that have that don't have a lot of Bundesliga experience. And of course, Finn Bogason, I think, is in his third or fourth season now, and so it maybe is taking a while. Of course, like I said, injuries and contributed to that, but I think it's still remarkable that he's been able to do so well, and it's encouraging for Augsburg, and of course it'll be encouraging for Iceland, who will be at the World Cup.
Maybe just to wrap it up and go right back to the start, how Hamburg could do with Finn Bogason's strike partner Michel Gregorich now. They could really do with a goal scorer.
Like
I said, this was a segment that we chose, but we want you to choose them in the future. So when we put that poll out on next Sunday, be sure that you vote. But for now, that'll do it for this week's Tribuna Weekly.
You can subscribe to our podcast in iTunes, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. You can find Matt Fort at Matt_4D, Jonathan Harding at JohnBlog66, 2Gs and 2Sixes, and I'm at Davis_Benopler.
Before we go, here is our stat of the week. Thomas Müller scored his 100th Bundesliga goal over the weekend, becoming the 6th Bayern Munich player to score 100 goals for the record champion. Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.